Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinnie's jokes.
Hello there.
Hello there, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. Right at the very last second, we managed to get on live air to you today. I've been busy arguing with cult members of the vaccine cult. How can you tell somebody's a cult member, ladies and gentlemen? Well, do they present you with evidence? No. Do they repeat themselves all the time? Yes. Do they make assertions that have no factual evidence and repeat those all the time? Yes. Do they accuse you of being a cult member? Why, yes, they do. Do they claim to not be in a cult? Why, yes, they do. Do they completely go crazy whenever you show them a fact that they refuse to look at? Oh, you betcha. And that's the, kind of the frustration, and what they're trying to do, essentially, is drive you crazy by accusing you of being what they are, a cultist who's an idiot, right? Now, I'm just being really straightforward and honest with you, ladies and gentlemen, because that's what I do, and surely I'll have some very bad consequences for that in Israel, as they say, in due course. Now, on to my very special guest that we have for you today, ladies and gentlemen, for full 2 hours. It's going to be Jeffrey Doherty, the famous Christian whistleblower who was on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie some time ago. Jeffrey, this is your third time on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Welcome back.
Glad to be here, Vinnie. Always a pleasure. I'm not sure if it's famous or infamous, but it's one of the two.
Well, let's hope there's some definition that can be broader and sort of latched upon like a alien parasite. Now, there is a big list of things that I did send you. I'm just going to copy-paste those into your little chat thing there. Remember, pressing that little speech bubble in the top of the Skype will allow you to get your Skype chat there, so that'll be good. But we've got a wee bit of a plan, ladies and gentlemen, and I apologise that I started off with something that's off-topic about the vaccines and that kind of thing. Although, Jeff, you do have a little bit of an opinion on that too, don't you?
Well, the vaccine thing, and it's very interesting because I was in the United States Air Force for about 6 years, and thankfully it was back in the 80s because they kept us full of vaccines. We literally had a little vaccine book, and we had to go under penalty of court-martial to go get our vaccines and to keep our vaccines up to date. And there's a huge list of these vaccines, and back then they couldn't have been very good for us, Vinny, but I shudder to think what they would be like today and what those poor people in the military are dealing with today. And you know, kind of the thing that we keep hearing in the vaccine genre here in the U.S. is some people seem to think that President Trump is an anti-vaccine guy. He was kind of making some noise like that in the election and in the campaigning. But as is often the case, sometimes the person that you get campaigning, well, that's not the kind of person that shows up when they actually take the office. Isn't that strange?
Well, that's the main thing about leadership is you've got to show up, right? And that includes showing up to stand behind the things that you've said.
Absolutely.
Mm. So, Jeff, do you have the notes that I just sent you there? I pasted them.
I do.
Okay, cool. All right, so let's start off then and tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do.
Yeah, absolutely. I spent 20 years, a little over 20 years, as a licensed minister with some of the largest Protestant denominations in the world. I was an Assemblies of God evangelist. And if you ever saw the old movie Leap of Faith with Steve Martin, you kind of have an idea of the genre that I operated in. That's a little bit of hyperbole, but not too much. And I was in that for about 20 years. I'm a Bible college graduate. I have 3 years of college level studying anthropology and geography. So, I mean, the things I think about and the things I write about and the things I speak about, I didn't just wake up this morning and start talking about them. But during that 20 years inside of big time religion, I began to see what I identified as cracks in the system. And the main thing started out with differences between what the Apostle Paul, who I affectionately call Paul, taught, and the things that were taught by Jesus or the Christ. And I began to realize pretty quickly that those two things couldn't be reconciled. And really, you're looking at two competing religions. And it's anybody's and everybody's choice which one they want to follow. But I think people should have the opportunity to have all the information at their disposal to decide what they want to follow. And I know it's not easy because, to be frank with you, Vinny, you know, to tell on myself, I knew probably 6 years in that I was in a bad place, but it took me another 14 to get out because, well, when the church is paying for your house and the church is paying for your food and you've got three kids and a wife that have developed the habit of eating three times a day, sometimes it takes a little while to work your integrity out of yourself and to act on it. And there's really no good explanation for it. It just took me a long time before I could summon up the testicular fortitude to go out there and say, this isn't right. And now what I basically do is show people, you know, tell people. I do a lot of traveling. I've been happy to be on coast, I think, 7 or 8 times now. And just to get the information out there to say, hey, look, whatever you want to believe, believe. But you have the right to know what lies under the foundations of your faith. And you really ought to take a look at it and make sure that what you're betting your eternal salvation on is something that's a solid foundation and not one of sand. So that's my story, Vinny, and I'm sticking to it.
Well, yesterday, a couple of my mates, we were talking about this, about evil and how it manifests. And more to the point, how normal people support evil, right? And
absolutely.
Stanley Milgram, the guy who actually conducted the Milgram prison experiments, right, where they
right.
he had this interesting slide that I committed to taking a screenshot of. 7 social processes that grease the slippery slope of evil. Right, you notice how it's not 7 processes of evil or anything like that, and it's not 7 signs to show that you're evil. It's actually 7 social processes that just grease that slippery slope toward evil, right?
Absolutely.
First one, mindlessly taking the first small step. And this is actually quite an important one, isn't it? Oh, okay, I will get a Bible. Okay, I will go to church. I will sign up for university. I will go to high school, that kind of thing. Dehumanization of others. There are people in this world that are satanic and they're evil and they're not human and they're demons and so on and so forth. Oh, okay.
Well, Vinny, it's only you and me that we know are right, and I'm still not quite sure about you.
Yeah, well, one can only hope. The third one here, de-individuation of self, anonymity. I'm a Christian. Oh, yeah? So you fit into an enormous cadre of thousands of different denominations that all disagree with each other, right? Oh, is that what it is? And that rolls right in perfectly to diffusion of personal responsibility. It is God's will. I love that. Whenever God does something really, really bad to you, it's God's will, you know, or he moves in mysterious ways. And it just reminds me of how a psychopath and a narcissist operate, is that they'll have a moral code, a stated moral code, but then just change the rules whenever they frickin' feel like it. So it seems like God's not the one punishing you. It's psychopathic scumbags who are masquerading as religious leaders. Just taking a stab in the dark. And that goes right into stage 5 in the 7 social processes that grease the slippery slope of evil. Uncritical conformity to group norms. Okay, so if you just go in there, vaccines are safe and effective, everybody believes it, that kind of thing, you're greasing the slippery slopes of evil, son. Blind obedience to authority. Oh, the government said it. Oh, God said it in his book that he wrote in quill pen, because apparently that's what God's right with, cunt. And the last one, the passive tolerance of evil through inaction or indifference.
Absolutely.
These are quite important, you know, social trends that people need to be cognizant of and be able to spot when they're happening so that evil doesn't rise again. What are the seven things that religion and government do not teach you?
I think you just went over those, Vinny.
Yeah, that's my point. And
absolutely.
I have great difficulty because when I'm talking to people who are idiots, who don't know what they're talking about, who call me cynical, and I go, look, I'm not being cynical. I just know what I'm talking about. All right? It's kind of a six in one hand, half a dozen in the other sort of process at some points, but there you go. Now, if you're working as a preacher for 20 years, how does that feel like to lose that chunk of your life?
Well, that's the reason why, Vinny, it took me, let's say conservatively, give me a break. It took me 10 years from the time I realized that this is wrong. I need to not be doing it anymore. It took me 10 years to get out of it because you have to realize when you're a preacher, it's not just like you're a salesperson or you're a housekeeper at a hotel or, you know, you work down the street at the hardware store. It is an all-encompassing life. We lived at the church a lot of times, or you at least live in church housing. Literally, the church is writing the check that is feeding your children. I had three of them. And, you know, they were growing and, you know, how it is, they're very, very expensive. I had a wife and those typically aren't cheap either. And it's not only that, they're not, but it's also the social pressures because, you know, not only are you have those financial pressures, but you have, you know, in my case, a lot of people looking at you. You're the preacher, you're the evangelist, you're the guy with all the answers, and you start. It slows you down on making big decisions because you think, if I'm wrong, how many people am I going to take down with me? And at that time, my thoughts were, if I get this wrong, how many people am I going to drag into hell? And of course, I've kind of grown out of those type of barbaric thoughts. But the thing, just to piggyback on what you were talking about with those seven rules, the thing that really frustrates me and the thing that surprises me and the thing that is perfect proof of those is that while a lot of people in what we call the truth genre or the alternative information genre, they have no problem identifying those seven areas, you know, within the political spectrum, within the financial spectrum, within the social spectrums. But all of a sudden, it's impossible for them to use that insight and apply that insight into the religious spectrum, which is just as large and just as big a part of the mind control system and the system that has the scumbags at the top and people like us at the bottom. And for some reason, I mean, even well-known radio shows, you know, won't let me on because I speak against the status quo of big-time religion. And it is to our shame and it's to our detriment that we won't subject the religious institutions to the same level of scrutiny and the same level of scholarship that will subject our political and other social institutions to, in my humble opinion.
Well, those radio show hosts of which you refer may be suffering under a very similar condition that caused you to stay in the job for 10 years. Money. Christian America is big, and there's a fuckload of money in it, and there's a hell of a lot of idiots in Christianity who will believe what you say and will buy your product if you just say, I'm a Christian, I believe in God, and regularly enough, all right, to convince them that you are, even if all your actions in the private or even in the public space don't signify any of that, you only need to say, I believe in God, I'm a Christian, buy my books, buy my DVDs. Buy my survival food. Vote for me. So on and so forth. Oh, I love the Bible. I love it how Trump's, shall we say, deification of the Bible only has two words of deification to it, and those two being the Bible, right? That's all he actually knows about the Bible, is that it's called the Bible. You know, the guy's never read it. I mean...
But he does collect them, so... whatever what that
is he,
means.
Yeah, but that's just because he owns a chain of hotels and he takes all the Gideon Bibles out of the rooms before he lets them out, bro. I mean, come on. He works for the Jewish mafia. He doesn't want any competition in there.
Absolutely. But unless and until we're able to apply our investigatory skills and our objectivity to our religious institutions, we're not going to grow as people. And it allows our religious institutions to stay where they are and not grow and develop and improve themselves.
They're maintaining the status quo.
Exactly. And what's the first rule of a bureaucracy? Maintain the bureaucracy.
That's interesting, because I was reading a critique of Judge Dredd comics, and the whole concept is that everybody's living in a giant city or whatever, and the judges have absolute control, no juries, they are the executioners. And it's said that essentially they are faceless enforcers of the status quo, and that is their only objective. And I thought to myself, whoa, that's actually really deep, isn't it? Right? For a comic book to really be
Absolutely.
Thinking about the overarching fascism in our society and how people have become shapeless, nameless, faceless enforcers of it.
Absolutely. And the most sinister part of it to me, Vinny, speaking from the religious point of view, and the real thing that got me out and the real thing that keeps me going is the very, very sinister nature and the very, very sinister rock bottom concept is that you and I and all of the good people listening to us, every single one of us, from the time we draw our first breath, are dirty, rotten, lousy sinners bound to burn in a place called hell, not for 5 years, 10 years, 100 years, but forever, just for the sin of being born. So it creates this scenario where you're a dirty, rotten sinner. And of course, if you're a dirty, rotten sinner and you don't want to go to hell, you got to have a savior. And guess what? Hubba hubba, we got the only savior in town. So come on down. And it is it's a prison control matrix. And so insidious is it that after 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years in it, even when someone comes along and says, hello, guys, knock, 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 is this thing on? This is wrong, that's wrong, this is different, that's not right. People will fight because their Stockholm syndrome up. They will fight for their oppressors against somebody that actually wants to help them get free. It beggars description. It boggles my mind. And like Mark Twain said, it's much easier to fool someone than it is to convince them that they've been fooled. But that doesn't mean I'm going to stop trying, Vinny.
Yeah, well, my wife's brother asked me a couple of years ago, Vinny, do you think we're going to beat the New World Order? And I go, no. And you go, well, why do you keep fighting then? Moral obligation. It's the right thing to do. Don't have a choice. You know, it does not matter whether or not you win the fight, only that you fight because it is right.
Vinny, you really don't think we have a shot to win?
I like to give the tortoise and the hare analogy. Right. Humanity is the hare. We thought we won the race. You know, we thought we'd vanquished all the kings and all the tyrants throughout history and that kind of thing. We thought we were safe. So we went to sleep under the tree. And a very slow, very determined tortoise has been walking that whole time that we've been sleeping toward the finish line. And we're only just now waking up and running as fast as our little bunny feet can carry us to see if we can cross that finish line first. All right, so, you know, I, for me, at best, I would give us a 50-50 shot. All right? Like in The Lord of the Rings, there never was much hope, only a fool's hope. And I will cling to hope, even if it is foolish, because all hope is good, even false hope.
Absolutely, and it's funny that it just popped in my mind that the reference to the tortoise and the hare, and you could make an argument that the tortoise is at least somewhat of a reptilian creature. But the reason I ask you that is because, you know, here I am fighting against, you know, the religious hierarchy and the religious system, and fighting against who I call the Lord of the Old Testament, the Lord in the Bible, who's really, in my view, the bad guy. And here I am one little crazy, you know, ex-Pentecostal evangelist taking on the Lord. And somehow, Vinny, I just can't get it out of my mind that if I let enough people know and enough people hear and enough people decide, hey, something's wrong, that maybe possibly, maybe it is a fool's hope, Vinny, but I've still got that hope that somehow, some way, we can beat that rat bastard.
George Carlin said he no longer cares, right? And he said that, so basically sitting on the sideline watching the human experience as horrible as it is and making jokes out of it, all right? He said that the key to happiness when you're fighting against something that big is to no longer have an emotional stake in the outcome.
Somewhat analogous to Bill Hicks talking about it, just being, it's a ride. And you just have to ride along and watch. And yeah, I get that. It's if you get yourself tied to the outcome, then it's a lot of stress and a lot of sleepless nights. But yeah, I mean, those guys are smarter than I am, obviously. And I'm trying to get to that place and understand. And like you said, we do all that we can. We give it all that we have. And at the end of the day, when we lay our head down on the pillow, to be able to say, you know what, I did everything I possibly could today to help advance the ways of right and hope. And in the end, that's really all we can do is just stay on the ride and keep our hands and feet inside the moving vehicle, right?
Mm. I was talking with a New Zealand talk show host and DJ, Mikey Havoc, and he said, yeah, but Vinny, when you talk about these conspiracies and all of that kind of stuff, you'll end up like my mate who has now kind of like got mental issues and things like that. And I go, yeah, but Mike, you know all of the same things that he does, and you didn't develop any of those same problems. By chance, are you very social, Mike? Do you go out? Do you party? Do you talk with people? Do you have fun with your life? And he goes, yeah. And I go, that's why it didn't screw you up, all right? Because you had a foot in the matrix that reminded you what you were fighting for. We're fighting for the good times. We're fighting for the advancement of the human race. We're fighting to release not only ourselves, but those around us out of bondage. Right? There really isn't a higher calling than that, I don't think. What are you trying to save humanity? What a waste of time. And you just go like, dude, you do realize that you live on this planet too, and you're a part of the human race as well, and there's so many people out there going, there's too many people, we need to kill them, I'm not going to have any children, I'm not going to do any of this, right? They take personal responsibility for the sins of the planet, all right? That's not the way to go about it. You're going to overburden yourself with other people's crap. Like I did in the first 5 years of radio. Every single person that comes on the thing, I'm taking on all their emotional baggage, I'm taking on their causes, I'm trying to help them after the show and before the show, and la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Until I realise that, I can just have a conversation with these people, inform myself, give that information on to the listeners, and then move on to the next show.
Yep.
Right? Easy.
Yep. And when you were speaking, something just came to me. I remember back when I started this 4 or 5 years ago, about every month or two, I'd get an email. And so I would say, you know, you've really helped me realize, you've helped me get rid of guilt. You've helped me, you know, really improve my life. And then all of a sudden I would get one every 3 months and I'd get one every month. And now I'm getting multiple ones every single day. And, you know, all it takes is one of those or two of those. And you're like, okay, let's get back at it, because we really are. Literally, not trying to save humanity. I'm trying to help people, help humanity save themselves. But that happens one person at a time, Vinny.
Yeah.
It happens one person at a time.
Yeah, and that's why somebody told me this. And you're like, Vinny, you're trying to please the masses with your show, and I really like that. And I go, I'm not trying to please the masses at all. You have any idea how much the masses hate me just for doing my show? I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for the one. And you go, what do you mean the one? And I go, let's say we're talking about this show, Jeff, and there's somebody in a situation very similar to you. They hear this interview, they then change their life. That's the one person that this entire show is being made for and being put up there on the internet, hopefully till the end of time, so that at any point throughout history, somebody can come back and look at this interview that we did, feel the same emotion that we gave on the day, and actually apply it to their own life and change themselves. And that means that you can't take responsibility for people's actions based upon your efforts, okay? It's not me who woke up anybody who listens to this show in any way, okay? It is the person who decided to listen that woke themselves up. That is
absolutely
the most important thing.
And we were talking a little bit before the show, and I just lost my train of thought, but darn it, I completely lost my... back when I was an evangelist, I went through a period where I was doing everything I could to save these people, doing everything I could to convince these people to make a decision for Christ. And one of those days, I got a knock on the door of my heart, so to speak, and the divine says to me, hey, you know what? If they do it just because you told them to do it, that's not good enough. It's only good enough when they actually realize it for themselves, and then they decide to do it. And what I was thinking about what you said is how people will, you know, be flashes in the pan in this genre we're in. They're here for 6 months, they're gone, because they're taking that on themselves, and they're trying to change people. And all we can really do is, you know, it's the old adage, you can bring a horse to water, you can't make him drink. You can bring a people to objective truth, but you can't make them think.
You can lead a horticulture, but you can't make her think was the correct nomenclature there, I believe. Now, we also talked before about how there's this very similar dynamic within the truth movement to within the religious movement. And of course, this is a great irony because the truth movement is largely religious. I mean, you know, that's the thing. It was Christian talk radio that I started listening to that I used to wake myself up initially. And then when I realized, that was BS and I was never actually into the religious aspect of it, it was simply people who were talking about all the other stuff that I was interested in. All right. I got sworn off religion very, very early on because it was boring. Right. Had to go to church. Oh my god, this is so boring. Why is Mum waking me up? I'm trying to sleep. Hey, it's a Sunday. I have to go to school and everything on the dick. Why are you ruining my day, bro? Like, every week, church ruined my day. And I was just perplexed as to why people had any compulsion to go there whatsoever, right? It didn't make any sense to me from a very, very young age. And I've always hated the very idea of sitting down in a place where you don't really feel like being, that doesn't give you any reward for being there, that you don't even enjoy being there anyway, right? What is the point in that? You're basically wasting your life away, son. It's like, what gives you joy? What actually makes you have a good day? Okay, if you're in the truth movement, ladies and gentlemen, if you do not ask yourself this question at the end of the day, perhaps you should. Did I have a good day today? If you're not having your good days every day, ladies and gentlemen, you're in the wrong business.
Absolutely. And to draw another analogy, and one of the reasons I appreciate your show and what you do, you know, going back to church and why are we here? Why are we here? It's so boring. I hate it. I'd rather slit my wrist or go to the dentist. But they're there because if they don't go there and do what these people say, then they're going to wind up in hell. And they got to go because they're trying to save themselves out of hell. They're there out of fear. And unfortunately, I think too many people in the truth movement are, and too many people that do what we do in the truth movement are really peddlers of fear and peddlers of fear porn just as much as the religious people are. And the thing I like about you, one of the things I like about you is that you do look for the lighter side of genocide. You do look to have fun. And I mean, just because we're going to hell in a handbasket doesn't mean we can't at least partially enjoy the trip, right?
Yeah. I mean, mate, I've been to some road trips to some really horrible places, but I enjoyed the trip.
Absolutely. So shame on us if we become peddlers of fear and not peddlers of at least that fool's hope. I mean, let's hang on to the good as long as we can. And then when we don't feel like we can hang on anymore, let's tie a rope tie a knot in the bottom of the rope and hang on some more. Without hope, it's really not worth doing anymore. Without hope, we're in a church of a different description, listening to a sermon of a different description, back in the same old place, like, oh my God, can I just get the hell out of here?
Yeah, it's, well, I want to actually talk about this in terms of a manifestation of a slave mentality. How do you actually do that? You've got to, again, as you pointed out, you've got to make people afraid, right? If they're afraid, their neocortex, the part of your brain that does your analytical thinking, your primate brain, and your mammalian brain, the part that does your feeling, your emotions and everything, click off their energy, and they channel that energy into your reptilian brain, which is your fight or flight, right? There's not a whole lot of thinking that goes down there. It's all reaction. It's reaction. It's reaction. And that's what they're trying to do. That's what the priest, waving his hand from side to side, is actually all about. It's a motion of hitting a child so that the children will see there on a subliminal level and actually feel intimidated by it. How do you traumatize a child? Very fucking easily as hell. You go
systematically.
You go, hey kid, yeah, I'm gonna tell you about the most evil, horrible, scary shit you've ever fucking heard of in your life, and then I'm gonna tell you that you're gonna go there unless you trust me to save you. Traumatized as fuck kid, turns out to be a religious nut job when he grows up. All right, it's just that easy. It's like getting juice from a lemon. It's what they're after, isn't it? Compliance. How do we reconcile that?
And, like we said before, it goes back to that almighty dollar bill. Be compliant, and while you're part of your being compliant is helping me increase my bottom line.
Yeah. It's the you had this aspect, the problem reaction solution that David Icke came up with, and it turns out that religion's got the sin salvation savior paradigm, which mirrors it, right?
Exactly.
Could you explain that paradigm?
It's very simple, and it is exactly the mirror of the thing that Mr. Icke came up with. You know, the problem reaction solution, because number one in that paradigm is sin. You're born with original sin. Not because of anything you did, but because stuff that other people did. And that really bothers me. You are born from your first breath with this thing called original sin. And if you have original sin, the only place you can go is hell, Vinny. So how do you get rid of your original sin? You got to have part two, a savior. And you have to have salvation. You've got to come to some place that has salvation. Who can give you salvation? Only a savior. And guess what? We got the only savior in town. So you are filled with sin. You are in need of salvation. And we've got the only savior. So we've got you locked and loaded. We are in the salvation business. And cousin business is a booming.
Holy cow. That just reminded me of talk radio show hosts that I know. Oh, there's a big problem. There's a new world order. It's going to get you there.
It's the same exact paradigm, and it's shameful whomever it comes from.
You know, it's almost, for me, it's a personal affront, right, when that kind of indoctrination comes through the truth movement. Right? Because the truth movement is not full of very intelligent people. It's full of people of all different varying levels of intelligence. All the way down to the dumbest shits you've ever fucking met in your life. Believe me, there are a lot of them. And we've all got blind sides, you know, like people will listen to like maybe 100 Vinnie Eastwood shows. But then I do the one episode that they don't like. And they never listen to another one again. And say Vinnie Eastwood's a shill. He's working for the New World Order. Because he interviewed somebody who I don't like. And you were talking before about how Jesus Christ said we don't actually have original sin. We've actually got an original spark of divinity within instead.
Absolutely.
Right? And meant to be nurtured.
You hear a lot, Vinnie, about the gospel of Jesus, but really what they're talking about is a gospel about Jesus, where he was born, what he did, what he ate, you know, where he died, did he die, did he die on a Wednesday, did he die on a Friday, did he rise on a Saturday, did he rise on a Sunday? All this thing is not, it's the gospel about Jesus, but nobody takes time to look at the gospel of Jesus. What did the brother actually say? And if you sit down with that Bible and you open it up and say, what did Jesus say? Well, you'll see where it says, and Jesus went out preaching the gospel of the kingdom. Oh, Jesus had a gospel. It was called the gospel of the kingdom. Let's read a few more pages. What is the gospel of the kingdom? The gospel of the kingdom is that the kingdom of God is in you. So you don't have original sin. Rather, you've got the spark of divinity within. But from a religious perspective, if you're trying to get people to behave and do what you tell them to do, when you tell them to do, where you tell them to do it, how you tell them to do it, and if you're trying to get them to pay you as much money as possible, you don't want people that are free moral agents. You don't want someone that realizes they got the spark of divinity within and that they really don't need you. You want that person, oh my God, I'm a dirty, rotten sinner. I got to get salvation. Can I please, please just get a little taste of your Savior? Maybe a little sip, maybe a little cookie. Can I just have some of it? It's like a pusher, isn't it? It's like a pimp, a pusher, a preacher. They all start with P's.
Yeah.
How about that?
Well, if that's it, then who was it that said religion is the opiate of the masses?
That was either Stalin or Lenin. I believe it was Stalin.
Oh, well, it's a good example then, isn't it? How even genocidal maniacs who have executed almost more people than anybody in the entirety of history know that religion is not that good for you.
Okay. Like George Carlin said, it's a big club and you ain't in it. And you can't get in it, we're talking about the religious club, until you realize you're a dirty, rotten, lousy sinner and admit it, until you realize you need salvation, until you realize we're the only ones that got it, and we'll let you into the club, but you got to keep working your ass off to stay in that club, and we're going to hold that hell club over you, and every time you start to think maybe for yourself, and every time you want to, you actually want to have an original thought, bam, we're going to hit it with you again and threaten you about hell. And you better, did I mention you better keep paying your money? 10% at least.
You almost described the exact process of the indoctrination into the cult of Freemasonry.
Really?
Yeah. Like I was talking to James Wright, and he was describing how they treated him and how he was supposed to act and then what they did to him when he turned whistleblower, and it was almost exactly the same process by which you're looking at. And this is why I don't know, maybe my life direction is changing a little bit, because for the last 10 years or so, Jeff, that I've been speaking to people like you who are intelligent, who know their own individual field very, very well, I've been doing it with so many different people that I've now got like, I don't know, maybe a 360 degree view of misinformation from all directions, right? And I'm thinking, oh my God, I've just done 10 years of study. I'm actually now like a New World Order professor. I can explain shit to people. Like, I really can. I can actually inform them. And the thing that's that jumped out at me after 10 years of doing this is the relationship between mind control, cult indoctrination, narcissists, psychopaths, and post-traumatic stress syndrome, which manifests as narcissism. And the same control methodologies in social orders that psychopaths and narcissists use to manipulate people and keep them under their control are actually the same, almost identical techniques practiced in mind control institutions and religious cults. And I was like, whoa, that means that mind control institutions and religious cults are all run by narcissists and psychopaths. So it's actually these two personality disorders that are running society in the main. All right. Now you look at anybody who's very successful at what they do. I'm a narcissist. You're a narcissist. Doesn't matter. Right. And there's a spectrum within that. There are benign narcissists who, although they've been traumatized in their life and they're very fragile people, they're also very talented and they have morals and ethics and that kind of thing, and they're real people. You get onto the malignant strain of the narcissist, on the other hand, and then you're getting into very, very closely resembling the psychopathic territory. No creativity, no morality, just do as thou wilt sort of crap there. And the victims of psychopathic and narcissistic abuse develop complex post-traumatic stress disorder, which has almost the same symptoms in the behavior as somebody who's a narcissist, who will then traumatize their children, and it goes on around again and again and again. So you can see how this aspect works in politics. You can see how it works in religious families. You can see how it works in legal dynasties, you know, how a lot of the judges and lawyers are related, that kind of thing. It's because the judge originally was a traumatized person from his dad, and then he traumatized his kids, and they developed the personality disorder as well. And because these personality disorders aren't very well understood, and because it develops a great degree of manipulative ability, all right, the ability to use people and the ability to not care about it either, it gives them an unfair evolutionary advantage. And I think that's why they're now all on top. I'd like to find out how to actually really explain that whole dynamic to somebody and explain all the indoctrination techniques and all of these personality flaws and so on and so forth, so that one day people won't need a narcissist like me to tell them that about the other worse psychopathic narcissists that are running society. And the only reason I'm really doing this and exposing them is because, like most people with personality disorders, they're genuinely very afraid of people that have worse personality disorders.
That's the truth. And might I suggest that, you know, even as you've just, you know, very intelligently explained that, you know, most leaders of most type of organizations are of those malignant personality types. And I would suggest that the malignancy is even multiplied when you're not dealing with, and I know just is a relative term here, where you're not dealing with just someone's life and just someone's money and just someone's family, but you're actually dealing with, if you believe in the eternal nature of the human spirit, you're dealing with religious psychopaths and religious narcissists. They're actually dealing with and injuring people with potentially for eternity. And that, if there was a hell, Benny, they would deserve to go, and I'd push the button, cousin.
Little trap door. Oh, man.
And maybe I'm so passionate about it because for 20 years, I was the narcissist and I was the psychopath that was pushing this on people. And Vinny, let me tell you something. I could preach hell so hot that it would make your feet burn, and I could take an offering like nobody else. I could get you baptized in the Holy Spirit. I could get you speaking in tongues. I could get you giving money. I could get you coming back. And I was good at it. And it scared the hell out of me how good I was at it, even when I didn't really believe it anymore.
Yep, that sounds exactly like when I quit being a salesman. I realized my ability.
Exactly.
I mean, I'd never used lies to manipulate people, but and I was still the best salesman in the company. But I saw all the other people who were like second and third place and so on and so forth using lies and manipulations and little techniques and things like that that I wasn't using, and seeing them make the same amount of sales with half the effort. And I was like, temptation. Right? Get me the fuck out of here. Right? That was it. I was just like, I'm surrounded by temptation to be a scumbag. I don't want to be a scumbag. I'm going to change scene. And I did. Until, you know, my money ran out and I had to go back to working for scumbags again. And then worked for another scumbag again. And then that was my final job working for scumbags when I quit. Because, you know, I got made 20 grand in a month. And I was like, ha ha, I've got enough to retire. You stupid company.
Sooner or later, we all have to make that decision. How much is my integrity worth? We all have a price. And sooner or later, we all have to decide what that price is and if we're willing to continue to pay it. Can you be bought? And for how much can you be bought? Or have you gotten to the place where, like me, what's the old saying is, there's nothing that, you know, there's nobody you should fear more than a person that has nothing to lose. That's me. I got nothing to lose. I got no axe to grind. I got no doctrines to defend. It's just me looking in the mirror and saying, like you said, did I do something good today? And you know what? I've made six figures. I've made in the high six figures, but I was not even close. And I don't now, by the way. I was not even close as happy then as I am sitting here today and by very comparatively meager circumstances.
Mm. Now, this concept as well, we always try to differentiate ourselves from the others and dehumanize others in the truth movement to a large degree. And it's, again, part of the slippery slopes of evil. And
that's so frustrating. It's even in the truth movement. Vinny, I thought I left that behind in religion, but guess what, man? It's here with us. It really bothers me.
That actually made me laugh one time as somebody said, "Oh, I can't believe there's ignorant people in the truth movement." And I was like, "Dude, okay, so let me explain how this happened." You got ignorant people in the mainstream society who then realize that mainstream society is bullshit, and then they carry all that bullshit with them into the truth movement. Okay? And then they start to think that this is their new reality, that everything that they now are being heard is the truth, that there's no such thing as misinformation coming from their trusted sources. It's only the government that does that, not knowing that the CIA has infiltrated the entire truth movement. All right? It's what they do, bro. You've got to control the information. You've got to make people confused as to where the real information actually is. And if you really want to promote confusion, mate, you have to lead the resistance yourself so that when the real resistance actually comes out and says, no, you can't listen to this guy. I know you think he woke you up. I know you think he's doing a whole lot of good, but he's leading you into a corral so you can be slaughtered with the rest of the cattle, bro. Okay, he's feeding you 80% truth with 20% bullshit, and the 20% that's bullshit, that's the worst bullshit of all, and it's the stuff that you don't see coming.
Absolutely. And you know, I know we don't really want to get political, but I was listening to Trump during the campaign, and I'm thinking about, you know, building that wall, and you know, that sounds like a kind of a good idea. You know, let's defend our country. You know, you can't have a country if you don't have borders, and if you have a wall, I mean, that'd be kind of great. And then all of a sudden it hit me, I'm like, you know what? If you have a big wall, not only can that be used to keep people out, but you can also use a big wall to keep people in.
You know, it'd be really great. I want to hang a big sign, a big Christian sign on that wall that says, "Love thy neighbor."
And really, Vinny, that's kind of the other side of the coin of the whole original sin thing. Not only do you think that you're a dirty, rotten scumbag because you've got original sin, but I know that you're a dirty, rotten scumbag, too, because you've got original sin. And it forces me to view my fellow man as a dirty, rotten scumbag sinner when really Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. And I thought, how in the world can I love my neighbor as myself if I'm a sinner and I know that he's a damn sinner, too? Dirty, rotten scoundrel. But then when I realized, oh, I've got original sin in me, so I can look at me and say, oh, I've got the spark of divinity in me. I've got divinity in me, so that means that Vinny, he's got divinity in him too. So now it not only changes my perception of me, it changes my perception of thee as well. And all of a sudden now, instead of a bam, 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 fight each other thing, now we've got something that it's called brotherhood, something that's called fellowship, something that's called, instead of kick a man while he's down, help lift a man up and walk a mile in his shoes. It changes you profoundly, and it changes society profoundly. And man, it's just a better way to go. And imagine that. It's the way that Jesus said instead of the way that the rat bastard Paul said. I'll just throw that out as an editorial comment.
Well, yeah, true. Well, we're divided along so many lines, and there was this one time in during protests against Mubarak in Egypt during the Arab Spring, mm-hmm. where there were large amounts of Christians being protected by the Muslims while they prayed, and then when the Christians stopped praying, the Muslims started praying, and the Christians protected them.
I remember that.
All right. That spoke to me really, really deeply, because that means that it doesn't matter about your skin color, your nationality, or your religion. It's about being inclusive rather than exclusive. It's about watching the back of the man next to you. Right? That's a very, very powerful and strong and noble thing. And it's just such a shame that that very human spirit has been hijacked by religion.
Absolutely. And there's nothing more exclusivist than religion, Vinny. And it's really specifically Abrahamic religion. I don't think the Shintoist or the Taoist or the, you know, Confucianist, I don't think they have the same problem. But you just look at the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Islam, Christianity. I mean, if I'm a Christian and you're not a Christian, guess what? That's the end of it. I'm right, you're wrong. I'm going to heaven, you're going to hell. But it's even more insidious than that, because not only does a Christian not like the Muslim and not like the Jew and likewise, but within Christianity at least, you got the Assemblies of God that don't trust the Baptists, that don't trust the Methodists, that don't trust the Lutherans, that don't trust the Episcopalians. So it's divide and conquer. With a exponentially divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer squared.
Divide and conquer squared. Dude. Bible college graduate, not math major. Thank you.
Yeah, get your education, son.
Absolutely. Oh, good Lord. But I mean, it is just so insidious, and it's just as bad as nationalism ever was. It's just as bad as any other ism, religious ism, and really maybe even worse, because it not only seeks to divide people temporally or right here on this earth, it's a eternal division, and it denies the potential of everybody that's not just like you. And how tragic and sad that really is on so many different levels.
Well, even at a meta level, if you only breed with people that are of your own racial group, that are from your own country, you actually inbuild weakness into the genetic code of your children.
Isn't that the truth, yeah?
If you, on the other hand, spread your seed wide, as many of the Native Americans figured out, what was it, Chief Sitting Bull said, all women are same color when candle goes out. All right?
Profound. Profound.
Yeah. And then you have a look at hybridized children, and you realize that half Caucasian, half Asian, half black, half Arab, and so on and so forth. And you actually find that the genetic codes between the two different races usually positively combine. There's usually it's quite a rare instance where I'll see somebody who has mixed genetics throughout their family line and that kind of thing, and for them to be a really ugly person. However, if they're a white guy from a white background that's gone back and gone back and gone back, and there's nothing stopping it, the chance just keeps going up and up and up and up that you're probably dealing with somebody who's really ugly, both on the outside and the in, right? Because if you're unable to accept other cultures, and don't get on with me, ladies and gentlemen, about the, you're pushing multiculturalism, Vinny. No, that's not what I'm doing, bro. Okay, it's just the simple thing. We're all made to fit together, okay? To think that an electronic plug that plugs into another one ain't supposed to go in the different jack points and so on and so forth is a little bit naive! Okay? The shit works. Fucking use it. Stop being an idiot. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question in Eastwood. Like, go ahead. Make my news. Back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Make sure to support the show on Patreon. Back in a tick.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood, like, go ahead. make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinny Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinny's jokes.
Your levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, complete with a creaky wooden chair and a squeaky desk. Listen to it. Doesn't that sound horrible? Listen to the chair. It's just awful. The shit that I have to put up with. Anyway, my very special guest is Jeff Doherty, and we're talking to the Christian whistleblower today for a full 2 hours. First hour blew by like nothing, so I need more coffee. Now, I also want to, I've got to confess something to you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm really struggling right now, okay? It's every day, pretty much, we've got like zero in the account, right? We need to pay the rent. We've got to just buy food, you know, pay bills, stuff like that. And my wife was off work for 6 weeks following surgery, where she had a 20-centimeter fibroid removed from her belly. That was huge, man. And so she had to recover for a full 6 weeks, and because she doesn't have like full-time employment at her job, no compensation, no benefit, no holiday pay, no nothing. So I launched a fundraiser back then, a little while ago, to pay for the vast majority of those expenses, and you did donate in massive amounts, ladies and gentlemen, and we did pay the bills for those 6 weeks. However, it's a couple of weeks past that now, and when she went back to work at the cafe, instead of having her work 5 days a week, they started working 2 days a week, and that's still going on, and it is very, very hard. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm on the verge of crying maybe 5-6 times a day, where I'll be sitting there and I'll be doing something normal, and then all of a sudden it just hits me about how broke I am, and how there's no end in sight, and how horrible the situation is, and I nearly just to that point freeze up. That's how bad things are at the moment, right? And this is all, I'm not blaming anybody here. There is nobody to blame but myself. Well, and also all the YouTube advertisers that decided, no, we're not going to pay any money on YouTube. And then, boom, all of a sudden, $180 a month US from YouTube goes down to like $60 a month. All right, like two-thirds drop in 1 month. And guess how much they need you to have in your AdSense account before they transfer it? It's not $64. It's $100. So it's got $64 waiting in there until next month, until the next payment comes through. And it's like, oh my God. Please, ladies and gentlemen, go to the Vinny Eastwood Show and click on that Patreon link, or click on those PayPal links, or donate through the Kiwi Bank, start up auto payments, something like that. I just really need your help right now. And I wanted to just be honest about it, because I don't ask for help very often. And I only ask for it when I need it, because I'm not a money grubbing dick who loves his comfort. Actually, I love suffering. And sometimes it just gets a bit much, right? Suffering's meant to be a teacher. And when you've already learned the lesson, the suffering is needless. Jeff Doherty, welcome back.
My pleasure to be here, Vinny. Always a great time, always an informative time. And I mean, it's one thing to be able to have fun, but when you can have fun and actually learn some things that can help improve your life at the same time, well, I don't know if it'd get much better than that.
Well, it is the ideal. I don't know about you, but I used to have a radio in my car that worked, you know, one of the many things that's really fucked up around here. And of course, it was one of those Japanese import ones, you know, from New Zealand where they sell them. Now, and it's like you can't get a certain amount of the radio band on that over, so you're forced to listen to government talk radio in New Zealand. And I can't tell you, right? I might be sad right now, but I was much sadder back then when I was listening to mainstream radio. You can't get worse than that. You want to have a heart attack, do you? Well, you want to stress out about stuff, do you? You want to yell and scream while you're stuck in traffic, do you? Well, just listen to our broadcast, but it'll just work out swimmingly. And that's indeed what happens. I wonder, of course, what shot the alternative media has. I understand that the truth is very powerful, but there is only one truth. There are infinite lies.
Absolutely, that's true. And you know, the one thing that gives me hope with our, you know, political system over here, and you know, going back to President Trump, you know, love him, hate him, believe him, not believe him. I think the narrative that he's created about the fake news, and he literally has, I don't know, he's been in there, what, 3-4 months, what, November, December, January, not long, but in that time, he has absolutely begun to take away, and he's done it in a lot of people's minds, but he's taken away this era of invincibility of the mainstream media, the CNN, the MSNBC, the New York Times, you know, the Washington Post. He has absolutely obliterated their de facto holy oracle status for a lot of people, and a lot of other people it's chipping away. So whatever else he's done, that is at least something that makes me feel good and gives me a little bit of hope for the alternative media, because as people realize, wow, this big mainstream media is fake, well, maybe I should check out some of these other people and see if they're any better. And it at least gives us a shot, Vinny, to use a baseball analogy. You know, we at least get a time up at bat. You know what I mean?
Well, it's I find it's a war of attrition, the truth. It's a long, protracted war, right? And as William Cooper said, he who fires the first shot will lose the war. Right? And I was just like, whoa, that's very interesting here, because no revolution that's ever kicked off has been successful if the revolutionaries were the one to declare the war first. All right? It's always the government suppression that then heightens the public to go, oh my God, and then get behind the revolutionary. It's always that dynamic. And I'm thinking, I go into evil Vinny mode sometimes, you know, just to think like the scumbags do. Like, how can we get these bastards to shoot first? All right, and the problem is, they already have, right? They do every day. They're killing. They're murdering. They're enslaving people. They're raping us day by day, in some cases, literally. Right? What yes. is it? What would it take? Because even the giant 9/11 thing, you know, whole population of the earth, billions of people, all came down at free fall speed, eh? That seems legit. Oh, you're going to try and save me from these terrible terrorists that managed to vaporize buildings with jet fuel, eh? Well, that seems legit. You know, they just swallow
but
it.
The magic passport survived.
Yeah. I mean, mate, terrorists come prepared, you know. I mean, you don't get on a hijacked airliner without your titanium tri-weave explosion-proof passport, bro. I mean, you just don't do it.
You know, Vinny, that puts things in perspective for me, and that helps me, because you know, sometimes I sit here and I think, you know, I've got, you know, I'm on YouTube incessantly, and you know, thankfully, our YouTube channel has grown. We're getting a lot of views, and I'm showing people right there on the screen. And, you know, most people at least have the understanding that the Bible was written in Hebrew. It was written in Greek. We don't understand Hebrew and Greek, so we had other people tell us what it means. And then I show them right there on the screen that it's like, it reminds me of the Princess Bride. I don't think that word means what you think it means. And they see right there on the screen, well, those rad bastards, that's not what it really means. They've been lying to us all this time. But then they'll go away and go back to church the next Sunday. And I'm like, how can they do this? But I got to remember, these are the same guys that believe a bunch of guys got on airplanes with box cutters, flew them into the World Trade Center, jet fuel caused a fire, and it fell at free fall speed.
Yeah. Inconceivable.
Inconceivable. You know what? It is a long battle, isn't it? We need to just settle in because it's not over anytime soon.
Well, yeah, I mean, I came to the realization when I decided to start into this battle will cost me my life. All right? And whether it costs me my life via my death, or whether it just costs me, or whether it costs me my life just by living it and doing it, it matters not. I've already made the commitment, right? And that's something everybody needs to be able to accept, is their own death. Although it is certain, your life is completely uncertain unless you dedicate it to something.
There's one of the Tom Cruise movie, Oblivion, which I think is a tremendous classic. And I think I'm one of the four people that ever watched the movie, but there's a line in there where Tom Cruise says, "Everybody dies, but what matters is, did you die for something worth dying for?" And that's really where we are. And, you know, you hate to sit back and think about it. You know, we're giving our life, we're giving the best of our years, we're giving the best of our talents, really beating our head, arguably, against walls and making progress that's incremental at best, when we could be, I mean, we've both been there, done that, made a lot more, you know, had a lot more things and stuff and a lot more success as the world would define it. But yet here we are, former psychopaths and former narcissists choosing to be masochists. But it's a sobering thought to think, one of these days, is it going to be sooner? Is it going to be later? Are they going to turn against us? Are we going to lose our life a la Seth Rich? Or are we just going to lose our life because we're going to work ourselves to death? But, you know, one thing's for certain. I think it was Jim Morrison that said, nobody's getting out of here alive. And I at least want to have maybe one, two, three people say, you know what? It was a lot nicer when that crazy Jeff was around than it is without him being around. Mm. And if that happens, I can live with it, even though I'm dead. You know what I mean?
I've been thinking about it the last couple of days, like, am I doing this out of penance? Do I feel guilty for some of the things that I have done? And am I now dedicating my life to punish myself because I don't like other people telling me what to do? I don't like other people punishing me for my actions, and maybe I'm punishing myself. That was a thought that got into my head a couple of weeks ago, and it's still rolling around up there. Am I merely doing this as a form of self-imposed penance?
You know what? As you were saying that, it just slammed into me a dramatic realization that I am at least a little bit doing this out of guilt and doing this for penance, because for 20 years, I was the dude in control of the slave camp. I was the dude in control of the concentration camp. I was the guy herding and driving. I was the guy doing the dirty, dastardous deeds. I was the guy perpetrating the scumbaggery, Vinny. And I know that it's not my main motivation, but when you said that, it just clicked in my mind. Yes, I am doing part of what I do. Part of the reason why I'm doing what I do is for a sense of penance, because I know there's people out there that my words and my deeds and them listening to me and doing what I said to do has caused them pain in their life. Funny story, I was preaching at this place in Idaho, and I made the statement about, you know, HBO and, you know, Hell's Box Office and all this. I said, you ought to just throw your TV in the river. Totally just, you know, making an analogy. And the next morning I get a knock on my hotel door, and it's the park ranger. And he says, "Are you Reverend Darty?" I'm, "Yes, sir, I'm Reverend Darty." He goes, "Reverend Darty, could you please not tell people to throw their TVs in the river? We fished 14 Trinitrons out of the river this morning." True story. So, yeah, I'm doing some penance, Vinny. Thanks for making that clear for me.
You fucking environmental fiend, bro. Like, where? Oh. You know, it's like everybody says, don't take religious teachings literally. Ha 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 ha
Right.
That's good, man. That's quite funny, actually. The concept of being fallible, all right, that's something you realize as a human being, that, oh, my God, I can be wrong. I can be tricked, right? But the concept of religion is infallibility, based an entire system upon infallibility. And then I realized that this infallibility complex actually exists to other systems outside of religion. The vaccine cult, for example, they're utterly infallible. No. We don't have to prove it. We don't have to show you evidence. I'm not even going to bother trying to argue. Is that by chance because you don't have any evidence? And you can't argue? Maybe! But it just... the frustration that you feel as a thinking person, and I stress that, as a thinking person, there aren't many of us left, and the numbers seem to be dwindling by the day, is that you realise how few in number you are against this entire horde of mind-controlled slaves who are being sent by their masters to attack the other slaves who are trying to overthrow the slave masters, right? Slaves fighting slaves for the slave masters. That is a really, really heartbreaking and difficult thing to deal with, particularly for people who have got, say, vaccine-damaged children, or people who've been traumatized by cops or something like that. And then you get all these people that go, oh, but I've met nice cops and so on and so forth. Yes, but they're all still very nice, ruthless enforcers of the status quo, who are not held accountable to the rule of law. Okay, it doesn't matter how nice the individual is when they're de-individuated in a mind control cult. Okay? That part of them is gone. It's not coming back. You can't use it as an excuse for the rest of the frickin' broad acts of the rest of the institution. But you can, on the other hand, blame the acts of the institution on the individuals who committed them. Can't you? All right? That's taking personal responsibility for the acts that you yourself commit. And I think that maybe I've done a lot of good by paying my penance, okay? And I think maybe, what if we encouraged other people to pay their own penance? Look, you've been lied to your entire life and you've been feeding those lies on to other people down the track or anything like that. How long have you been doing that, bro? Oh, I've been doing that for like 12 years. Okay. Let's say it's like a relationship. For every relationship that you're in, it takes half the length of the relationship to get over, conceivably. So, you know, there you go. I've done 10 years after 20 years of life being a slave. Okay, I think I've actually paid my penance, and now it's actually just about having fun and doing what I feel like doing. And I think that's probably the best way, isn't it? Have your own level of satisfaction.
Without a doubt. And you make a great point about the vaccine industry and that air of infallibility. And, you know, religion has that in spades. Of course, it's, you know, explains one of the reasons why the popes are such good snow skiers, because they are infallible. But at any rate, infallibility has another step within religion, because not only is it true because God said it, but the Bible is true, Vinny, because the Bible says it's true. And it doesn't matter if there's no proof anywhere else on the planet, and it doesn't matter if there's information that shows that what's in that one book is wrong. The Bible is true because the Bible is true. And what are you going to do with that kind of circular reasoning?
Yeah. Oh, man, it was so funny. I was listening to a clip on Radio New Zealand, and it's John Campbell. He's like a 20-30-year journalist now, and he's just basically laying into the anti-vaccine people, essentially, right? And they go, these people just won't believe us. They won't believe us. They don't believe the opinion of Dr. Lance O'Sullivan, but we've got somebody. What was it? Let me just back up a little bit. Don't be quite so excited, Vinny. I know you're attacking antagonizing a hornet's nest of vaccine cultists, but let's just keep it calm for a second.
It's your show. Do what you want to do, Benny.
Oh, I intend to. I was just restraining myself. And well, so basically what they said was this is my opinion, and the vaxxers and the anti-vaxxers don't agree with my opinion. Okay. And they have a anti-vaxxer person come on and say, well, the problem is that we've got facts and you're only giving us your opinion. Okay? If you would perhaps sit down and watch the film and study it and then and review the facts, it'd be a little bit different. And then the talk show host just goes, oh, okay, well, we'll get another person's opinion then. This person's from the university and the medical field and everything like that. And again, lays out no facts, right? The entire argument of the vaxxed film is to talk about the facts rather than opinion. And the entire mode of operation of the mainstream media and its coverage of the film Vaxxed in New Zealand is to talk only about the opinion and never deliver any facts. Who do you think is the corrupt one? Who do you think is the cult? Right? Just from those simple analyses right there, you can tell very, very easily that one of them is not on the fucking level. And it's quite conceivably the one with many billions of dollars. You know, maybe they're the ones that are slightly dishonest and maybe stand something to lose. Just throwing a suggestion out there. But you do have to point things out to people. And that was something, again, Bill Cooper said. I watched a little documentary about him this morning, and I got a lot of respect for the guy, actually. I never knew him. I wasn't even in the truth movement until long after he was dead. All right?
But how did he meet his demise, Vinny?
He was shot by the cops. Where he lived, they often had teenagers that hang out down the cul-de-sac. And they'd tried to come to his house to arrest him a number of times. But he talks about the jurisdiction. One of the best men in America at explaining the actual real jurisdiction and how they had none on his property and so on and so forth, constitutional rights, the whole nine yards. They knew they couldn't get him. So they sabotaged. In Eager County, where he lived, they got somebody from a neighboring county to come up, all plainclothes officers, young cops too, dressed without their ID badges or anything like that, not identifying themselves. They park down the cul-de-sac, start making a whole bunch of noise, hooping and hollering, the radio up loud. And Bill's a respected member of the community there, so he comes out of his house, drives down the road a little bit to come and tell these guys to go off. And as soon as he realizes, you know, ex-naval intelligence, he realizes very quickly that these are cops, starts going back towards his house. And then they start running after him, and they shot him. So this is, and they didn't allow any news cameras or anybody else near the crime scene for his body. His body was left unattended for 15 hours. No, he doesn't need any medical attention. No, he doesn't need any of that. They even waved off a news chopper so that they couldn't even film from the sky where his body was and how it was laid or anything like that. They could have moved and altered his body 100 times in that time frame. And it was just because they wanted him dead, because he was exposing 9/11 as being an inside job 3 months before 9/11 even happened. He was laying out the documents of the Bush family crime syndicate involvement in 9/11 less than a month or two after 9/11 happened. Right, this guy was really, really shaking things up. He had the number one rated radio show in his time slot on the internet at that time, and they killed him. And now very few, most of the people in the internet truth movement scarcely even know of his existence. And these are the heroes that I believe are worthy of emulation, right? Not to worship, not to hold them up on a pedestal, but merely to take aspects of their character, their nobility, their strength. And just like a cannibal, eat that part of them and make it part of you. Because I think it's the courage of people who stand up for what they believe in, regardless of the fact that it literally threatens their life and that of their family. That courage has inspired many, many people in the years since his passing, right? And I think...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Showing a little bit of backbone in front of everybody and having them see you do it has untold profound positive effects.
Wow. You know, and as long I've only been in this movement, I guess maybe 3-4 years, but I'd never heard that story, and shame on me for not knowing it.
No, it's not a shame. I mean, it's been buried, right? It's just like, I can't blame the sheeple, so on and so forth, as Bill Cooper called them, for not knowing that 9/11 was an inside job or anything like that. They'd never even been given an alternative to the lie, as David Icke said. It says, you suppress people's sense of the possible and don't present them with an alternative, and they will cease to be capable of imagining that an alternative even exists.
Mm. Profound.
Mm-hmm.
Profound.
And it's not their fault, you know? It's like, oh, you people are so stupid. You're so brainwashed and indoctrinated. You know, you can see these truthers arguing on Facebook and the internet, that kind of thing. You know, they only just found out 9/11 was an inside job like 6 months ago.
That's true.
And now, they're trying to school people on what the truth is. It's like, dude, you're not there yet. Whippersnapper. All right, that's the term, isn't it? All right, we've got truther whippersnappers out there who are only just waking up to this stuff, have no idea how much they don't know, and are arrogantly pushing an ideology instead of seeking the truth. There is a very profound difference, ladies and gentlemen, and you all better find that truth for yourself rather than pushing it onto other people, because you can't. You can't force people to wake up. You know, you can't put a gun to somebody's head and say, wake up, wake up, you know, because they're not gonna. They have to watch, I don't know, 100 hours of documentaries, minimum, before you even get some tiny grasp of the badness of the situation. And that's if you do that in a couple of weeks to a month, you know, that kind of thing. It'll really mess your head up, boy. I recommend it.
Been there, done that, and there really is no shortcut. There really is no shortcut. But, you know, in the spirit of Bill Cooper and with that understanding and with the idea of just, you know, it being a war of attrition and just one step at a time, baby steps, one foot in front of the other, you know, I've finally found some semblance of traction and some idea that I'm actually getting somewhere by, you know, just going on the YouTube channel and showing people, you know, from the Bible that this guy that they've been worshiping their whole lives, this guy that we've been worshiping 2,000 years, 6,000 years, whichever, you know, if you're Jewish or Christian, that he would send people out to murder babies, rip the babies out of pregnant women, murder children, murder men, murder boys, murder girls, murder all of the animals, wipe things completely, cities off the face of the earth, over and over and over and over again. And then 50, 60 times of his own accord, he says, I'm jealous, I'm wrathful, I'm vengeful, I will get you, I'm jealous, jealous, jealous. I mean, I've been in relationships with jealous women. It's no fun. But yet, when people start to realize this guy that we've been calling God is jealous, this guy that we've been calling God is a killer, this guy that we've been calling God is likely a practitioner of blood magic because he's maniacally seeking blood, 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 blood. A guy named Jesus or the Christ comes along and says, hey, no more blood. You don't have to do blood sacrifice anymore. Water baptism is going to, you know, help you take care of that karma hand down of energy that you call sin. And hey, guess what? You've got the spark of divinity within, not original sin. But now they had to kill him and go back to the blood. I mean, if you're Catholic, you believe you're actually eating the body and drinking the blood of Jesus. If you're Protestant, you think, oh, yeah, we have the, but it's just symbolic. Oh, I get it. It's okay to just symbolically cannibalize because you're not really doing it. But when you actually put those facts out there and people start putting A plus B plus C together, they start realizing that they've been lied to. There's a chance, Vinny, that, again, for the one that we were talking about, that bulb's going to go bing, and they're going to send you an email maybe and say, hey, thanks for helping me see this. And you can sit back in your creaky-ass wooden chair and say, you know what? I did good today. It's going to be all right. I can live to fight another day.
I'm kind of a little bit on the fence about that, right? I have difficulty taking compliments. All right, and I have difficulty, like, Vinny, you're really good at this. And I'm like, I know.
Tell me something I don't know.
It's like, yes, I know I'm the best YouTuber in New Zealand for the truth movement. Yes, I know I'm the best talk radio show host this country's ever produced. Yes, I know I'm the only New Zealander who's been given an American talk radio show. Yes, I know I'm way more eloquent than the other talk radio show hosts in this country. I know. I know. I know. Thank you for recognizing it. But, frankly, that's not an achievement. What is an achievement is that you listened to my show and you started charting your own course through life and stopped listening to the show as a result of hearing it. That is a compliment that I am willing to receive.
That's profound. And that's really, you know, we really should, we can really tell we're successful when we work ourselves out of a job, can't we?
Well, it's management. The goal in successful management is to manage a business so efficiently that you no longer need to manage it. Right. I came up with that, stumbled across that philosophy a while ago, and then there was another philosophy about passive income, money that you don't have to go out and work for. All right, money that you actually get to enjoy. You know, this is the concept of Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Man, Poor
right.
Man, that most people who have money don't get to enjoy it because they have to spend all their free time making more money, right? And so I was like, I don't want to work for somebody who's a scumbag. I do want to chart my own course through life. I want passive income, right? And that's essentially what I've gotten myself now, is that there is money coming into my accounts on a day-to-day basis from donors from all over the world. And that means that I don't have to work if I don't want to. But the fact that I keep getting up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning and working my ass off until like 5, 6 o'clock at night, 5-6 days a week, without somebody telling me to do it, without getting any extra money because of it, that's when you know that you've actually got a life of your own. That's when you know that what you're doing is actually important, not to the world, but to you. And there's so many people I'm hyper-emotional sometimes. Not hyper-emotional, more like hyper-empathetic. I feel people's pain. And because I know, I've been through it. I know what it's like to get stuck in traffic all the time. I know what it's like to really be busting your ass and to not have any coin at the end of the day. I know what it's like to try and support somebody when you don't have enough to support them with, and it makes you feel bad as if you've failed. Okay? I know what that's like, and I know that all of us, in a large part, are going through varying stages of these suffering processes of life under a New World Order system. And I am sick and frickin' tired of people trying to defend that system. In any way, shape, or form, it's indefensible. And it's just such a long fight. It's just such a hard fight. It just doesn't let up. Every morning there's more scumbaggery needing to be exposed. You know, it's like, oh well, guess I gotta do it. Man.
If you don't, who will?
Yeah, yeah. But the other thing is, I also realized on occasions that I don't have to actually give a fuck. Like, have you ever noticed that? You're like, I'm trying to help people. And then there's somebody who comes in who demands your help and is a real dick to you. And you can tell them to fuck off. And they do. Oh, it's glorious.
The delete button can be wonderful therapy because it's just bloop and they're gone.
Block and the scum is gone. It's magical. It's
magic.
It's like making rainbows with your hands, bro. You know? It's just frustrating, although, that you're dealing with people on a day-to-day basis who simply do not get it, and you want them to get it on a gut level, but you know that you can't. Right?
Right.
If you build it, they will come. No, no, no. If you build it, somebody will come along and try to knock down your sandcastle.
Isn't that the truth? I mean, there's two ways to have the best sandcastle on the beach. One is to build a really nice, really cool, really intricate sandcastle that you pour your heart and soul into. And the other way is to go around and knock down everybody else's sandcastle. And in religion, in the Christian world, I constantly saw all these preachers fighting against each other. And the old song says, Jesus loves the little children of the world, red and yellow, black and white. They're all precious in his sight. Bull crap. Red and yellow, black and white. Put them together and watch them fight. And I thought when I came to the truth movement that it'd be people, you know, with each other's back and, you know, people, you know, putting their arm around one another and people supporting one another. And guess what? It's the same damn thing. I come in, the first thing I hear about is, I hate George Norrie. Well, I hate Art Bell. I'm like, dude, there's only a few of us. Do we really have enough of us that we can circle up in a circle, ready, aim, and shoot each other? I thought the Christian army was the only one that shot its wounded. It's not. Because here comes the truth movement, folks, and we're going to do it just like they did it because it's so much fun. Come on, we've got to be better than that.
Well, you do find those vibes, and a bunch of people have been telling me this lately that they want me to bring back Truth or Dare. And Truth or Dare was a bit where we'd go out to a bar with a whole bunch of truthers, musicians, protesters, activists, people who speak and so on and so forth. And we just have a night together, drinking, talking, and watching each other's performances and listening to each other's speeches. Right?
And it like an open mic comedy.
It felt so good, bro. It was like, oh, we're home. It feels like we belong. It just, wow. And then, of course, the guy had to sell the bar because he wasn't making enough money.
Money always rears its ugly head.
God damn. You know, it's just, that is the major control mechanism that does control all of them overall, right? Is that absolutely money system, all right? It controls the religious system. It controls the military system. It controls all the school indoctrination systems and the medical mafia and so on and so forth. It's all based on that monetary system, bro, right? And maybe they've just set up a cult at the top, where the banks are, and that's where most of the power is kept. But the power of that, the ability to create infinite money, can be filtered down to all the other corrupt institutions below, so that they can all reinforce themselves, protect themselves, and grow at an infinite rate without the possibility of their money running out. Because, in the case of religions, they're tax-free!
Exactly. And Vinny, would it surprise you if I just dropped a little nugget on you that said that you've just identified that money really is the thing that drives the entire corrupt systems? In fact, it's the thing that drives all of the corrupt systems. And in this little book called Revelation, there's a verse in there that says that talks about something called the mark of the beast. And you've seen movies about the mark of the beast. You've seen, you know, TV shows and books and what the mark of the beast is. It's the implant. It's the chip. It's the tattoo. It's this and that. And if you just look at that in the actual Greek language that it was written in, it means the impress on a coin or the printing of money.
That is the mark of the beast. And you can't buy or sell anything currently without it. Unless you trade privately. And in which case, you've got to have like a whole bunch of mattresses to trade for your motor mower. And it's just very inefficient, right? So you're like, okay, you know what we've got to do,
bro? How many chickens does it take for a bushel of corn, right?
And that's stupid, you know, because money could be really good. The problem is more keeps getting minted and printed all the time, and the value keeps going down while the taxes keep going up, and then so do the living costs. So I saw an interesting statistic today saying that New Zealanders are on average paying 60% more for their homes than they were in the 1960s, and they're earning 20% less than they did in the 1960s. So you've got a 60% increase in living costs with a 20% decrease in what you can live off on average.
It's almost as if somebody doesn't want New Zealanders to have the independence of owning their own homes.
Mm. Now, when we talk about that, somebody's home is supposed to be their castle, right? And that means that, you know, you can make your own law there, sort of thing. But people don't realize that having your own home and not having to pay rent, first of all, not having to pay rent is something that frees you massively. Massively gives you the opportunity, you know, you can I was talking to a mate of mine the other day when it went into his house, and he says, oh, this used to be two rooms, bro, and I knocked the wall out and everything like that first day I got in here. Did that make you feel good, knocking down a wall in your own house, bro? He's like, you fucking oath, mate.
You know? Benny, I'm just experiencing that for the first time. I bought a place, and on the first of the month, there's no rent, and it really is incredibly freeing. It's liberating. It's like, wow, I like this.
Mm-hmm. No longer a rent slave, you know? We're all debt slaves, but some of us aren't rent slaves, too.
Right.
It's like, oh, bro, no, I don't. What's going on here? Why do I have to keep paying rent? Where's my landlord? Where's my landlord? He's in China? Fuck. Did he raise the rent twice in 2 years that we were here? Yes. Even after I painted the fence and the deck and stuff like that? Yes. Just the frustration that I feel is a lack of independence, all right? And ultimately, that's something that happens to you when you get a mortgage. And what is the Latin for mortgage, you ask, ladies and gentlemen? Death grip. It's got you for life.
Absolutely. Vinny, I have to ask you, in view of everything that we've talked about and in view of, you know, a rough situation, what do you do to be able to consistently keep that lighter side in the midst of all the genocide?
Really, really terrible puns. And more weed than any man can smoke.
I guess that's what I'm missing.
In an ideal world, you know, like, that's just pretty much like it. What happened was I got really badly traumatized by the cops for selling weed. And it's kind of ruined my life. And you know what's really interesting, though, is that the thing that helps me with the symptoms of the trauma is weed.
It's the curse and the cure.
I mean, you know, you just can't win.
You know, oh, my.
I don't know. And also sex. Sex is good. Mm. Lots and lots
with
of
other
that.
People, preferably, right?
Oh, yeah. Again, in an ideal world.
In a perfect world.
Yeah. Sex, weed, shitty jokes, the Vinny Eastwood survival serum.
There you go. I'm making notes, trust me.
Mental notes. all right, so back on the religious angle, I wanted to get this out, is how much I actually very, very much dislike arguing with people about religion, okay? And I also don't like me being critical of religion being a reason why a religious person decides to no longer talk to or listen to me about any of the other subjects that they agree with. It's this blind side that blocks all. Okay? And as we've said so far, a number of times in this broadcast, actually, the truth movement is absolutely infected with this. And folks, I got to say, you've got to... You really do have to support networks that aren't all religious, you know? And if you want to name one of them, the only one of them that I know, it's American Freedom Radio. All right? We're not just trying to, you know, get people to be afraid of hell in order to get your donation money. We're trying to give you information and then simply ask you to support the network. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, click on their donate button, go to their Patreon, give them a few dollars a month. It costs them like $5,000 a month. Just to keep this network on air. And they are struggling, maybe even worse than I am. Okay. And I think, what if religious tithes, and I did actually think about this idea at one point, Jeff, and you might be able to school me on this somewhat. 10% of your money going to your alternative media at the end of every week on your paycheck. Do you have any idea how quickly the alternative media would just explode, dominate the airwaves, destroy the New World Order, break apart the programming, just BAM! If people were actually willing to support the truth as much as they were willing to support indoctrination.
What a brilliant idea. What a brilliant idea. That would be absolutely transformational. If we could get 10% given into something that's actually trying to set you free instead of keeping you a slave, giving 10% into something that's actually helping you realize and develop your individual freedom and your individual improvement and empowerment, instead of trying to hammer you down and tell you how bad you are and trying to give you a list of rules and regulations that you can't follow, so you have to keep coming back and giving us more and more and more to hopefully maybe somehow just barely scrape through by the skin of your teeth and make it into this place called heaven instead of this place called hell. Could you imagine if people would dedicate 10% of their income to people that are actually changing their life for a positive way and actually making a profound difference on the world and in the energetic structure of the world and the spiritual frequency of the world? Wow, it would literally change the world in 6 months, a year?
Yeah, roughly, very short period of time.
How much do you really want to change the world, folks?
Well, let's test that theory, is when I put this archive up and it goes up on American Freedom Radio, we'll have a number of people listen to it. Maybe they'll have listened this far, all the way to the end. Is there anybody out there, ladies and gentlemen, who would, just go and calculate your paycheck and fizzle out 10% of it towards American Freedom Radio and actually email them, AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com, and tell them, I'm giving you 10% of my income every week. I'm giving you 10% of my income every month. All right? Just to see if it can be done, even for the one. Because that's ultimately all the show's really for, isn't it? Hey, I feel...
Vinny, real quick story. I think this is very appropriate. When I was a pastor, I was usually an evangelist, but when I was a pastor, I would work with people because I really believe that if they gave, it would help them in the long run. And they would say, well, I can't really afford to tithe. So I'd say, you do this. Tithe for a month, and I'll keep the money set aside. And if at the end of that month, you need the money to pay your bills, or if it's causing you hardship, I'll give it back to you. But if you don't need it, then you keep tithing. Deal? Deal. In 5 years of being a pastor, I never gave a dollar back, Vinny. And that's for helping to support something that is broken, something that is a slave mentality. What could happen in people's lives if they'd actually commit to helping something that's going to help individuals and help society as a whole?
That's right. But, of course, we need the fear programming in there to make everybody accept the tithe in the first place. So how about this? Ladies and gentlemen,
convince the hell part.
Ladies and gentlemen, donate your 10% tithe to the Vinny Eastwood Show every month, or the Rothschilds will get you.
Absolutely.
And you know the best part about it is, I'm not lying! They will fucking get you!
That's the truth.
Oh my god. I'm just so exhausted, man. I've been up very, very early. In fact, what is this? This is coming into my 12th hour of straight work pretty much so far today. And, mate, it's been a really, really long week, I must say that. So I apologize if we're merely rehashing old territory and things like that. Now, there is another part of these notes that I gave you there. It was about how Christ would talk to people that weren't even alive and help them to get over the scumbaggery that they suffered.
Absolutely. I found a verse, and I have over 100,000 hours studying the Bible, and I probably read the Bible hundreds of times, but it's amazing. You keep reading it and you keep seeing new things. And about 6 months ago, I was reading this passage in 1 Peter chapter 4, and it says, this is why, and I'm reading it in the Greek, the original Greek, this is why we evangelize those that are dead, so that having been deceived by men in the flesh, they can have the opportunity to make a decision, even in spirit, towards salvation. And it blew my mind. And when I went out and practiced it, there are literally people in some place that's not here, in some place that's not there where they're supposed to be. They're in that middle somehow. And I'm telling you, Vinny, just like it says, they're stuck. And when you give them the information, they receive it. And they actually apparently go to the place they're supposed to be. It's just like Ghost Whisperer without the good-looking chick.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, I mean, if you can be forgiven after death, it's not entirely dissimilar from how the Mormons, because nobody wanted to join their church, started going to graveyards and converting the dead, and then put their names on their registrar to declare themselves an official religion with enough members.
That's an absolute truth. But the only problem is, Vinny, if you're going to grow a church to those people that are dead, they don't pay their tithes.
Well, I mean, we were talking before about a punishment or a tithe that exists even after death, though.
Absolutely, and that's true, you know, I realize there's an insidious nature, and it's bad enough that they're trapping people and enslaving people and, you know, making money and also living off of their energetic essence while they're here on this earth. But not only that, there's another reason for the indoctrination for a person's entire life. If you're a narcissist like you and I, you probably think, well, I'm a pretty good guy, and when I die, I deserve to go to heaven. If you're not a narcissist, you may say, oh, I'm a dirty, rotten, lousy guy, and I deserve to go to hell. Well, whichever thought you have, once you're finished in this life and that part that is you leaves this meat suit, well, guess what? Religion already has a system set up where if you believe that you should go to heaven, they're going to direct you and guide you and shepherd you into a place that's fairly consistent with your idea of heaven. Well, Jeff, why would they want you to sit on a harp or sit on a cloud all day and play a harp? Because they can continue to feed on your energetic essence. They're spiritual entities that love to feed on that la-la love and life, that sexual type of energy. They love it. And then if you're the person who thinks, oh, I'm a dirty, rotten sinner, I'm going to hell, they will direct you and marshal into a place that's consistent with your concept of hell. And guess what? There's other entities that feed on the fear and the dread and the pain and the fright. And it's just like Jack Sprat. You know, he could eat no fat, his wife could eat no lean. Between the two of them, they pick the platter clean. Well, religion's got it set up where they milk you while you're here, and they continue to milk you while you're there until somebody gets enough testicular fortitude to say, you know what, we're going to go in there and we're going to try to tell these people, hey, you can still be set free. It's like the Fram oil filter, man. You can pay us now or you can pay us later, but we're going to help you out if we can get to you. And boy, if we had that 10%, it'd be a lot easier to get to these people, Vinny. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I actually am really looking forward to that. Create a new religion that is specifically about exposing religion.
There you go.
And a religion that would actually indeed expose itself. Probably two small children in a park at night or something. But the thing about it is that it all has to be honest, all right? It all has to be above board. And that's why this show is very, very different from all the other talk shows, because I am 100% real and me. When I get behind this microphone, there is no change in my personality. I am this much of a dick in person. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to The Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Please go to TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com to donate today. Jeff, do you have a website there, bro, or just your YouTube channel?
the best way to get in touch with me and find out what I'm doing is go to my YouTube channel, Jeff Daugherty Show, or just put in Christian Whistleblower or Jeff Daugherty on YouTube, and bam, there you are.
All right, we'll put the links in the description as well. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to this New Zealand's premier alternative radio show. Thank you very much. We'll see you again sometime.